ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 54th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I hope you've packed your phaser and your sonic screwdriver because we're going to get to talk with Scott and David Tipton, the writers behind the Star Trek The Next Generation and Doctor Who crossover for IDW. I had great fun talking with them as we discussed this really interesting and historic book, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy that interview. Then I review some of this week's comics, followed by our monthly visit with Pete Casaza from Big Planet Comics in College Park, Maryland, and everything wraps up with the latest news and previews with Gianluca Glazer and Ian Cullen. There's a lot to get to, and we got to go warp speed and get in our TARDIS, so let's get to it. Okay, I'm talking today with Scott and David Tipton, who are some of the writers in Assimilation Squared, which is the long-awaited Star Trek The Next Generation and Doctor Who crossover. Scott, how are you tonight?
Very good.
And David, how about you?
Doing good, too.
Good, good. Because you're brothers. We may have a little trouble telling who's who, because I'm one of a pair of identical twins, and the two of us, when we talk, people can't tell who's saying what. So we may have to clarify that a little as we go along.
This is Scott. I'll probably be the louder one.
Okay. Now, I want to get some of the fanish questions out of the way. We always got to do that. We got to know which Star Trek is your favorite Star Trek. And we'll start with you, Scott.
It's hard to say. I mean, I grew up with the classic stuff. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I'm always going to have a real strong feeling for classic. But with Next Generation, since I kind of watched that as it happened, I've got a real affinity for Next Generation.
Okay. David, how about you?
Oh, it's like Scott said, it's hard to say. I mean, we've written most of, except for Voyager and Enterprise, we've written Star Trek and done quite a bit of it. But I think I probably like Next Gen to be the best.
Okay. All right, David, while we're talking to you, which Doctor is your favorite?
Oh, I think it's the current Doctor.
Matt Smith, okay. Yeah. And Scott, how about you?
I really like the Tenant Years. Matt Smith is great. I'm really enjoying the new stuff. But there's kind of like a romance to the David Tennant period that I really dug.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm a Deep Space Nine guy, but I agree with David that Matt Smith is the first Doctor that I really, really got into. Everybody else, to me, was sort of them complaining, oh, why do we have to get dragged into all this stuff? Why can't we just do it? So for me, here's Matt Smith who actually goes Geronimo, and I'm going, yes, adventure, I like it. So why don't we start finding out about how this came to be? I know that IDW has licenses for both Star Trek and Doctor Who. How did they decide to come up with a crossover comic?
I'll take this, Dave. As I understand it, the Star Trek Legion of Superheroes crossover that they did with DC Comics did really well. Mm-hmm. And I got to thinking, what else could we do? And the biggest one they had ready to go was Star Trek and Doctor Who. And they both, my impression is that IDW kind of thought, well, there's no way we'll get this approved, but let's give it a shot. And so they reached out to both CBS and BBC and asked if they were amenable to the idea of a crossover series. And they both said, yeah, well, show us a plot. Tell us what you're thinking. And that was where we came in.
Cool. Now, you guys have written Star Trek before, as we mentioned. Now, on this, you're working with Tony Lee, who writes the Doctor Who comic.
Right.
Did you guys all kind of get together and hash out what you wanted to do when it became apparent you could do this?
No, actually, it was pretty much Dave and I who came up with the full plot. Tony's role on this is kind of more of a consulting editor. Mm-hmm. Because we both grew up watching Doctor Who as well, and we're big fans. But having that kind of an expert in the house to kind of like, as we're going with things, check things out and make sure everything is working good from a Doctor Who perspective is kind of where Tony's role is. But the actual plot line and the proposal, that came from Dave and myself.
Very cool. It's interesting because the Borg and the Cybermen are just naturals to work together. There are various similarities, and then there are also dissimilarities, which I'm sure you guys will explore as we go through the 8 issues. And the first issue is coming out in the next couple of weeks. Do you have a date yet when that's going to come out?
I think it's late May, Scott. Is that about right?
Yeah, my understanding is it's the last week of May.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay, because it says May, and bad news is sometimes when you say things like that, some books get, especially if there's no specific date, they'll get pulled off a little bit. But I'm glad to hear it's going to come out in May, so that'll be good things. Now, the first issue deals largely with Matt Smith and Captain Picard, at least they're on the cover painting, which is really gorgeous. I really like it. The thing I'm interested in is that these two work the best together, it seems to me, is that Matt Smith's Doctor and Captain Picard seem to be people who would work together very well. Was that why you went this route?
Well, I mean, getting back a little bit to the question you asked earlier about getting it approved, one of the things that I think also played a role is that, for example, BBC America has been showing Star Trek Next Generation and Doctor Who. So I think there's been a little bit of a connection there in a sense that, and I think Next Gen is very popular in England too, so I think that's part of the connection that ties these two a little bit together. I think that plays a role in this. And as far as what you're asking right now, what do you think, Scott?
I have thought that, for example, tonally, the current version of Doctor Who and Next Generation are very similar. Mm-hmm. And of all the captains, I think you could say that Picard is kind of the most cerebral, which does make him a good match for the Doctor in that, I mean, the Doctor's basic power is just being the smartest guy in the room. Mm-hmm. These are both very deliberate thinkers. These are guys who would rather think their way out of a fight than have to fight.
Right, and that makes sense, especially in Next Generation. There were people I used to know who thought that the Enterprise didn't have actual phasers on it. They actually had flower pots all over because they were sort of a pacifist ship. And so I always thought that was kind of funny in that the Enterprise actually had some of the best phasers that I saw on Star Trek, and yet it's got a reputation for being quite the pacifist thing. And that, in that sense, I think these two generations are going to work well together. The thing that's interesting to me, though, is I just now got a look at the cover of issue number 2, and neither of them are on the cover. Instead, we have Captain Kirk and the Tom Baker Doctor.
Yeah, that's actually for issue number 3, I believe.
Oh, was it 3? Okay, I thought it was 2.
Yes.
Because you got 8 issues, are we going to get to see different doctors interact with different captains?
Yeah, that was a nice little surprise. We'd been keeping it under our hats as long as we could, but we'll be doing a flashback sequence with Captain Kirk and the Tom Baker Doctor.
Very cool. The picture of Kirk is funny. He's got that normal Shatner yelling look on his face. And
yes.
Tom Baker with the long scarf and stuff. So it looks great. I'm looking forward to it. And I understand, too, there's going to be lots of little cameos and Easter eggs for us to enjoy along the way as well.
Oh, we definitely try to do that. J.K. Woodward, the artist, he's very big on putting in as many tips of the hat to both Doctor Who and Star Trek along the way.
Now, the interesting thing, too, is that you've got the Borg and the Cybermen, who have a lot in common. They are humans who have been turned into machines, basically. Both groups are. And so you kind of have to wonder, you know, I don't know much about how the plot's going to go, and I don't know how to, I don't want you to spoil anything that you don't want to give away. But are these alternate universe beings of the same race? But don't give it away.
Let's put this way. It's safe to say that, I mean, the histories of the Cybermen and the Borg, as fans know them, are intact. There's no supposition otherwise to that. But how the two are going to meet up and how they're going to interact are where I think a lot of the fun lies.
Yeah, I think it's always been important to both Scott and myself that we keep the continuities intact, and we know there's a lot of tricky things about that with a crossover story, but we try to do that in such a way that we think readers will be happy with the result.
Now, 8 issues a story, too, so that gives you a lot of room to play around with these characters and to do different things. So I think that's going to be fun for you as writers to be able to explore the characters a little bit and how they interact with the different universes.
Yeah, it really does. It gives us room to breathe that we haven't had in the past. And I believe the longest I had before has been a 5 issue. Right. And to really get 8 issues. But I think, you know, with a story this big, with this many characters, you really need this kind of elbow room to really play out the story. Mm-hmm. And having an artist like Woodward, who is just so good at going big and kind of giving it a widescreen feel, it really makes it feel kind of epic, which is nice.
And that can be a real challenge also with Next Gen, because there are so many characters, and everybody wants to see some time for all of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Now, are you going to get to bring in, say, like Enterprise or Voyager, which the one that you guys haven't written previously? Are they going to be able to show up?
No, we're holding them pretty strictly to Next Gen with a light dusting of classic.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Now, the interesting, too, of course, is Tom Baker's Doctor. Now, the way as I was reading the description is that this is kind of a doctor's memory. At first, he apparently can't remember all the stuff that's happened in the past with this, and all of a sudden, some of the memories start to come back.
It's not giving too much away. I think we might have tipped it as a flashback adventure. So that's kind of a good way right now to say where we're going with it without giving away too much.
Okay. What can you give away? I mean, as far as the story goes, what would you like people to know about so that they're enticed to pick up that first issue?
Well, basically, I mean, they're just seeing these mythologies crossing over and seeing the Doctor and his companions in this entirely new universe Again, I'm so spoiler averse, it's hard to really. Dave, what do you think?
There's two things. It's the interesting thing of seeing how these characters would interact with each other that everybody thought probably wouldn't happen. Yeah. And then also trying to do that within the constraints of the continuity of both of those universes. Yeah. And that's where the actual writing challenge becomes, because there are high expectations on the audiences of both sides that you write these characters and these stories in a way that fits in with how they've grown to know how these universes work.
Right.
And trying to do that is important.
We want to have the Doctor still feel like the Doctor, but still interact in a way in the Star Trek universe that feels honest to both. I mean, it can't betray either.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it was important to us for it to be Borg and Cybermen, to have it to be a unified villain that is equal parts both. So it doesn't feel like we're just putting Picard in a Doctor Who story or putting the Doctor in a Star Trek story. It has to be something big enough that both histories feel engaged in it.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Picard's history with the Borg is pretty extensive, and the Cybermen, too, have also had a lot of things to do. There was a recent Matt Smith episode with the Cybermen, where the guy had the child.
Right.
And that guy was apparently being converted into a Cyberman, and that was typical Doctor Who. Hearing this child cry and want him to come and rescue the child just made it so that he could not become a Cyberman. I thought that was very Doctor Who.
Yeah, that really is. And that's kind of the challenge in this, is that I think we've mentioned before, Star Trek is a bit more hard science fiction, whereas Doctor Who has a bit more of a fanciful, almost a fantasy element.
Mm-hmm.
So making the two fit together in a way that is honest to both is where the real fun lies as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
There are times when Doctor Who will pass over something in a science sort of way that Next Gen would not find quite so tolerable.
Right.
Now, did you guys feel much pressure? If there are more rabid fans than Whovians and Trekkers, I don't know them.
Do you remember that famous bit from the beginning of the Conan O'Brien show when he took over from Letterman, where he's mm-hmm. happily walking along the street and singing to himself, and everyone's wishing him good luck with facing Letterman, and the bit ends with him going into his apartment and stepping into a noose? And just he's about to hang himself, I say, oh, time to go on, and he takes the noose off and goes out and does the show. There's an element of that. There is some high pressure in it, but what's good about it is that we have good editors, mm-hmm. we have great publishers, mm-hmm. and we have great licensors.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these layers of people who are like backstopping us. Chris Ryle and Denton Tipton, no relation, by the way. There are three Tiptons on this book, but only two of us are related.
Okay.
Chris and Denton have been great editors on this every step of the way as far as making sure that we do meet these expectations. Tony's influence on helping us out with the Doctor's dialect and with making sure the Doctor's rhythm sounds right and making sure all of our T's are crossed with Doctor Who's continuity.
Mm-hmm.
And then our licensors at CBS and the BBC. I mean, we've been working with our licensors at CBS for years. Mm-hmm. We hadn't worked with the BBC before. But again, I mean, they give great notes. They're very aware and very conscious of the histories of their characters and want to make sure that everything we've done is true to both. So with that kind of a backstop behind us, I'm feeling pretty good about it.
Yeah, I've been really happy with the reaction in the press. And like Scott said, I could not have been happier with being with Chris Rall and Dan Tipton. And CBS and BBC have both been great. We've been really happy with the kind of feedback we've got from them and to make it a better story. So I've been really happy with that.
Now, when they got approval to do this, were you the guys that they wanted to have do this? Did they come to you first?
As far as I know. I can't imagine anybody saying no to this job.
Okay.
Let's put it that way.
Well, I was kind of wondering is this something that maybe, because you guys have been fans as long as you have, that, I mean, every sci-fi fan gets together and debates. My brother has a thing about Superman coming out of the TARDIS and, you know, and all these things going on and stuff. Had you guys ever discussed this kind of a crossover before the project came along?
Not really before the project came along, because, again, it was the kind of thing that we both thought, well, it'll never happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, IDW had the license for Doctor Who, but it's like, well, you don't sit around thinking, well, what would happen if Jack Bauer from 24 went on the West Wing? It's never going to happen.
Right.
But so once we first got intimations from Chris, this Doctor Who Star Trek thing might be a go, started thinking about it. And then we're like, well, really? Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was a really open door for us to start thinking about what kind of things we'd be dying to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the Star Trek Legion crossover, one of the things they did that I liked a lot was they compared the crew of the Enterprise to the Legion superheroes. And you find out there's a lot of similarity between the characters as well as differences. Are you going to do some of that in this? Are you going to do some comparison between, say, like the Doctor and the Captain? Are we going to explore the things that make them different as well as what makes them similar?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And we're also going to, since we do have such a larger cast with Next Gen, trying to pair up the Doctor and Rory and Amy with the different crew members along the course of the story in ways that make sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now as far as Next Generation continuity goes, where does this fall?
I think it fits in, was it season 3, Scott?
I think it's between season 4 and 5. I mean, we have it down at the star date, so
yeah.
We literally have it down between which episode it takes place. I believe it's end of season 4, beginning of season 5.
That's right.
Okay, now as far as Matt Smith's Doctor comes in, where does his part fall in his current continuity?
This story on the Doctor side of things takes place in the period of time just after Amy and Rory have gotten married.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, and in the context for the season 4 part and the Next Gen side was that it's after Best of Both Worlds.
Ah.
And so but not so far along that we see the later versions of the Borg, like when Lore gets to work with the Borg and stuff like that.
Right, and yeah, I think it's even before Discovery of Hugh.
Exactly.
Yes, so it's that period for Next Gen.
So he's still dealing with the whole thing that happened to him as a result of the Borg.
Right.
Oh, that's safe to say, yes.
Okay, that's good. This is a good time because he's kind of vulnerable. One of the things about Captain Picard is he's always been sort of an upper crusty captain, you know. He kind of looks around and everybody is kind of beneath him. And when that happened to him, that had to really shake up his character. And, in fact, he goes to Earth at one point and has to deal with his family as a result of that.
Yeah.
And the Deep Space Nine series begins with him being confronted by Benjamin Sisko about that, and he doesn't take it very well.
Right.
So all this stuff's going on, so this is kind of a neat thing. The Matt Smith Doctor has seen the Cybermen at this point?
The good thing about that is whether or not this incarnation of the Doctor has encountered them. I mean, it's still the Doctor, so he still knows the Cybermen. But I don't think there's been a Cyberman appearance in the Matt Smith years during the timeline of our series.
Okay. So they'll be in kind of different places as they interact with the enemies in this thing.
Yes.
Right.
And, of course, you know, Star Trek, there's no such thing as an enemy. There are people with different agendas.
Exactly.
And I get a feeling that's kind of what's going to happen here with Next Generation. When they meet up with the Doctor, I mean, the Doctor's perspective is a very different one for the Next Generation. As when they interact and things like that, there's going to be times in which they rub against each other quite strongly. And other times they're going to see very much eye to eye. Are you going to explore those kinds of issues?
Yeah, well, those disagreements are going to be integral to what the story goes.
Okay.
Don't you think, Dave?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, very good. Yeah, believe me, I don't want to get anybody in trouble. I don't want to spoil anything. That's the last thing I want. I want to enjoy the book as much as the next person. And it sounds like it's really going to be interesting. The great thing is, to me, when writers who are fans get their chance to tell these kinds of stories, it's often something much better than if you get somebody out of the blue who didn't have any idea what the Enterprise was or a TARDIS was. You get people who understand the characters and understand the fans and can play with us in that way. And I'm looking forward to that from you guys.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean...
Yeah,
speaking for myself, the last 3 or 4 years, I have been just obsessed with Doctor Who. I mean, there are probably as many TARDISes in my office now as there are Enterprises. And so when this came along, I was like, oh, I can't believe we're going to get this. It's amazing.
Very cool. Now, the Star Trek Legion came out in a hardcover edition.
Oh, yeah.
Are there plans, possibly? I know it's early in the process, but is it likely that this might end up in a hardcover edition later on?
Well, not that I don't want you all to buy numerous copies of the monthly, but knowing our publisher the way I do, I think a hardcover is a pretty safe bet.
Well, that's a good
idea.
And
it'll be gorgeous, too, by the way.
Oh,
man. I don't think anybody makes better-looking books than IDW.
Now, let's say that does go really well, and let's say it goes over big time. Would you guys have another idea for a Star Trek Doctor Who crossover 2?
Oh, there's always another idea. Yeah, I can't imagine ever turning that job down.
Okay. Now, the one thing I wanted to point out to people, we talked a little bit about this before we started to record, was the fact that it's called Assimilation Squared.
Yes.
I noticed that some people don't seem to have a superscript when they do things on the web, and so it looks like Assimilation 2.
And I think they have it and just don't know how to use it. They just don't know where the button is.
That darn superscript gets in the way all the time. So it's called Assimilation Squared. It's eight issues. It's going to be monthly, right? It starts the end of May, and it goes every month, pretty much for the rest of the year then.
Right. Pretty much, yeah.
Yep.
Very cool. So we're looking forward to it. People who are fans of Doctor Who are looking forward to it just as well as Star Trek fans. And the thing I'm going to be really interested in is to talk to people who might know more about one than the other and see if this kind of entices people to go and check out, like, say, Next Generation if they were big Whovians, or check out Doctor Who if they were big Next Gen fans.
Well, we were very aware of that going in. Dave, why don't you tell them a little bit about how we kind of set things up with that? We were very much thinking that we need to set the table for new fans of both.
Oh, yeah. There was definitely a concern on our part. And we also knew that there were going to be some people who would be familiar with one rather than the other. And so we've also tried to put the story together in a way that not only tells the story, but also can introduce one or the other to new readers.
Yeah.
And of course, if IDW has their smarts together, they'll have ads for the Star Trek comics as well as the Doctor Who comics in the middle of this, too, I would imagine.
Oh, I'm pretty sure that'll happen.
Very good. Anything else you want to tell us about this before we wrap it up?
Just that it's probably the most exciting project we've ever worked on. And we've been doing a lot of Star Trek books for the publisher the last few years, and just getting a chance to handle something this big and this historical is insane. It's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of job, so we're really excited for it to come out, and I think people are going to dig it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, we've both been very happy with the support we got from both of the licenses, so it's two big ships coming together for this, so it's good to have that work out so well.
And
yeah, it's been quite a relief to have it go so smoothly.
And if you know any Trekkers or Whovians and don't have any idea exactly what to give them should their birthday or a holiday gift be needed, this might be something you would consider.
It is the perfect stocking stuffer.
Yes, that's true.
8 months away.
That's true. You guys got any other projects you'd like for us to know about?
Right now, this is our big thing on the table for the remainder of the year. I mean, it will keep us busy
for a while still.
Well, good. Well, we're looking forward to it. I know many Trekkies and Whovians and everybody in between who is anxious to see it come out just because it's historical, and people are just going to be anxious to see it.
And that's been the other, not to say it was a surprise, but it was so pleasant that when the news broke, I would say it was 100% positive reaction.
Wow.
Across the internet. I mean, there wasn't anyone saying, oh, this is a money grab or that's a dumb idea. It was across the board. Everyone, every site, every news site, every entertainment site was just excitement. Wow, this sounds like a fantastically fun idea. And that was just great to see.
Very cool. So I'm looking forward to it. Maybe what we'll have to do is after the miniseries gets done, we'll have to talk about it and see what the reaction of fans were, what you heard about people who have read the books.
Oh, anytime. Sounds good.
Okay. From one brother to two brothers, I wish you much success with this and hope that you get to another one besides this one because it really looks like a lot of fun and really enjoyable.
Thanks a lot.
What are you doing for Memorial Day weekend this year?
I've got the best working vacation planned ever.
I'll be sitting on a panel talking about social media promotion.
I am hanging out with my friends from all over the country and even across the globe.
I'm hitting up several of the writing panels, anything that involves superpowers, but also that gritty sci-fi thriller vibe.
I am going to be hanging out with the largest collection of podcasters in America.
I'm probably going to kill someone.
Sigler! No! Bad author! Bad!
There will be at least one writing morning at the nearby Panera. I hear it's where all of the cool folks go for coffee.
I am spreading myself far too thin and going on both a podcasting track and the literary track.
So, where am I spending this amazing weekend?
At Balticon.
I'm going to 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 Balticon. Shouldn't you be going too? That's Balticon, the Maryland Regional Science Fiction and Fantasy Convention, held Memorial Day weekend each year. For more information, go to balticon.org.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. To leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands. And now, another exciting episode.
And
And let's have a look at the comics that came out this week. The book of the week for me was the 100th issue of The Tick, which featured a visit from Invincible, the Image character that I'm going to be talking with Pete Cassazza about in the next segment. He shows up and the two of them get to work together. A big change happens in the Tick's universe by the time things are done. It's kind of fun to read this book, and it's a pleasure to see such a crazy character survive as long as he has. And Invincible actually discovers that some of his villains aren't that much different from what the Tick has been facing, so I found that quite an amusing observation. And the Tick has survived many of an animated series and a live-action series on television, so he's quite the popular character. If you get a chance to pick up the book, I would highly recommend it. The New 52, of course, had a lot of new things that have been out in the last couple of weeks. We had Earth 2, which I'll also be talking with Pete about in a few minutes. That book is a really good book. I highly recommend that one as well as World's Finest, which has Power Girl and Huntress. So there's a lot of good things going on, but the thing I really want to focus on is the Night of the Owls event, which is crossing over through a lot of the Batman titles. Boy, is that ever good stuff. Mr. Snyder and Mr. Capullo just are doing a wonderful job in the Batman title, number 9, which just came out. And Batgirl's got some interesting stuff that's happening. Batman and Robin has Robin take on a Talon. There's all kinds of interesting things going across the Batman universe. So, boy, if you're not reading it, I highly recommend that one. The hardcover for the first several issues just came out. I'm hoping to get Mr. Snyder and Mr. Capullo to sign that for me someday, because this is classic Batman. It's very best. So, please get The Night of the Owls. It's really worth the effort to go back and get the issues you might have missed. And those are the comics that came out this week. I want to welcome back to the podcast Pete Cassazza from Big Planet Comics in College Park, Maryland. How are you doing today, Pete?
I'm pretty good.
Good. Why don't we talk about Free Comic Book Day first? That was the first Saturday in May every year. How did that go this year for you guys?
It was great. We had probably our highest turnout ever. We saw a ton of people. It was huge.
You said this is the highest one you ever had?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. Last year was actually down a little bit. It was a good year, but not quite as good. And this year we saw, I think, close to 350 people. Lots and lots of kids and families, lots of kids, lots of teenagers. It was a great time.
Great. Anything that you noticed? Any books that were more popular than the others among the free books?
It's hard to say because we blew through all our copies.
Oh, okay.
I had 3,000 comics to give away, and I gave them all away within 7 hours, something like that. I mean, I had some Mickey Mouse comics left over, and that was pretty much it.
Wow. Wow.
So, yeah, I had 250 Avengers comics to give away, went through those. I had at least 200 Spider-Man comics, a lot of DC comics, and everything I had pretty much we went through fast.
Wow.
So, it was great. Lots of new people, and it's great. This whole week I've been seeing people I'm not familiar with, so it seems like a lot of people found us. They ran an article in the Prince George's County Gazette about Free Comic Book Day, and we were mentioned. Mm. And they talked about the Avengers movie, too. And I think between the press, the Facebook, the print press it got, and the Avengers movie, it just all coalesced into people being really excited and interested in comics.
Right. Well, hopefully picked up some new subscribers and some other people that will come on a regular basis from now on.
Yeah, it's hard to say. We generally don't see people too often who are new on Free Comic Book Day that often, but they know we're there, and they do come back periodically. So it's just great to let people know we're there. And they can find us if they need something or are looking for something. So we're always happy to do it. It's always a great time. Everybody who comes has so much fun. They can't believe everything there is free, and it still winds up being a really good sales day for us, too.
Good. Okay, so how about April? How did April do in your store?
April was pretty good. I was hoping we would have another fantastically good month, and we had a very good month, but it wasn't quite as strong as I was hoping. But it was still overall a very good month, certainly a lot better than last April. Mm-hmm. Which was not very good for us. So.
Okay. Of course, Avengers versus X-Men is going now, and records indicate that nationally that's the top-selling book. That was the top seller in your store as well?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, certainly number one, we sold a lot of number ones, and I'm actually running out of twos and threes, so we're waiting on those second, third printings coming up. So it's done very well for us. Batman has also done very well, though. The new Night of the Owls and the Court of the Owls collection has been phenomenally popular because it's so good. Mm-hmm. And it's right up there. We're probably selling more Avengers vs. X-Men than any other single title, mm-hmm. but Justice League and Batman are pretty close. So it's definitely our number one seller, but it's not by a huge margin. It's definitely by a measurable margin, but not by 100 copies or, you know, 80 copies or something like that. But it is still our number one seller.
Great. Now, how's it selling compared from this month to last month as far as that title goes?
It's pretty good. It's hard to tell because it is a long series. Mm-hmm. And the first 2 weeks, we had a ton of people come in looking for it, and then it kind of slowed down a little bit. Mm-hmm. But then, I don't know if people heard about it, or it's because of the Avengers movie, or they're just interested in comics. It's starting to pick up again now. Mm-hmm. The last 2 weeks, I've seen a lot of people coming in looking for all three issues, or issues two and three. Mm-hmm. So it's a long series, so you're going to have this kind of ebb and flow to it. So, like, in 2 weeks, you might not sell a ton of copies, but over 6 weeks, you might sell an enormous amount of copies. So it's one of those things, even the more time usually goes on, the more you sell. Like, I'm still selling plenty of copies of number one, mm-hmm. and that's been out for about 6 weeks now, so 6 or 7 weeks. So people are still hearing about it and coming in wanting to check it out, so that's good.
Now, how is this AVX? That's the closest thing to it. You've got Avengers versus X-Men, and then there's the AVX, which has some of the individual battles going on.
Battles, yeah, it's pretty well. It's done almost as well, really. The first issue over a couple weeks did probably as well or almost as well as the second issue of the main title, Avengers versus X-Men. So it's pretty solid. And there aren't a ton of these follow-up titles. There's only that one, really. Avengers and X-Men books are crossing over, and the sales have jumped up on there a little bit. Mm-hmm. But as closely to the main series, this one is selling nearly, it's probably selling 85% the numbers that the main series is. Mm-hmm. So for a follow-on, that's phenomenally high. Oftentimes, it'll only sell 50 or 60% of what the main book sells.
Well, now we've seen the beginnings. Let's talk a little bit about some of the new books that have come out, the second wave of the New 52. It's only been a week or two out. We've seen Earth 2 and World's Finest, a couple of other books, a G.I.
Combat. Dial H for Heroes. I was surprised. We had a lot of people come in that first Wednesday looking for those. They're like, do you have the second wave? Do you have the second wave? I was really surprised. We had a really good Wednesday that day, mm-hmm. and I think a lot of people came in because they immediately wanted to try the second wave. Earth 2, I liked myself, and we sold a ton of those copies. That was immensely popular. Mm-hmm. All the other ones did well, but that one by far and away did the best. People were really interested in checking that one out. And a lot of people came in specifically to check out the new wave, which I was surprised. I wasn't sure, you know, after almost 9 months, I wasn't sure how many people would care, but apparently a lot of people are still interested, which relates to the other point I have is that lately, I've been introducing people to titles like Batman and Batman and Robin and Green Lantern, and they've been enjoying them so much, they've come back and buy a lot of the other DC relaunch titles. Mm-hmm. I recommend 3 or 4. They wind up enjoying them. They come back and buy 5 or 6 more of them because, well, those were good. Let me check the rest of them. And a few people have even tried to check all 52 or 48 of the 52 or whatever. So this relaunch is still going really strong and is still bringing people into stores, and they seem to be enjoying what they're trying.
Good. Well, based on what you're saying, then Marvel's still probably the top producer as far as money and things like that goes with you guys. And then DC comes after that?
Pretty much. It's hard to say exactly. Week to week, you'll do a little better. The Marvel books tend to be a little bit more expensive, and they do some of them do sell a little better. But overall, I think DC has a wider array of titles that people are interested in. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a mixture, really. The fact that both are bringing people into the store is great for us. Mm-hmm. You know, the more reasons people have to come in, the more often they will come in. They're not just waiting for 1 or 2 good titles. There's 6 or 12 or 15 good titles they're anxious to read. Mm-hmm. That's really good for the industry.
Mm-hmm. Now, how is G.I. Combat doing compared to, like, Men at War?
Probably slightly better. It's always hard to tell with the first issue because those tend to be really high. People want to try new things. And then you really find out in issues 2 and 3. I think this issue was a little bit more fun. It was a little bit more accessible than the Army at War title, just because it's dinosaurs and GIs, and you don't have to explain much about what's going on. So, you know, all those smaller titles from DC, they do pretty well, but they're not, you know, knocking them dead. But people are interested in them. So I always think variety in a product line, you can't have all superhero books. Right. People get bored of all superhero books, especially from DC and Marvel. Marvel really only does superhero books for the most part. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a drain sometimes. People want to branch out. It's one of the reasons I really like Image and Dark Horse, because they do a lot of different stuff, especially Image. And it does give people something interesting to try. And I think DC has kind of learned that lesson more so than Marvel. that they do have a variety of horror books, of more real-life kind of combat books, and different kind of things for people to choose from. Mm-hmm. And people are interested in trying different things.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you about were the books that are related to, say, animated series. Like on DC Nation, you've got Green Lantern, the animated series, and Young Justice. And then in Marvel Universe, you've got The Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, and Ultimate Spider-Man. And all of those have comics related to them. Are they selling okay? I mean, how do they do if they're related to that?
They do okay. They're never the main draw, and they never do phenomenally well. But people are interested in them, and they're interested in them for their kids. You know, most comics nowadays are for 13 and older, to say the least. And there isn't a lot for the under 13 crowd, especially from Marvel and DC. And this is their outreach to try to reach those kids, because TV shows are hugely popular, and kids love them. And the reading of the books doesn't follow that kind of popularity. The one thing that I will say is that's been really good for us is the Mad cartoon that's on Cartoon Network.
Mm-hmm.
It's gotten kids really interested in Mad Magazine and anything related to Mad Magazine, and they're really anxious and excited to read it. The other one is like, oh, it's okay. It's kind of like the show, but it's not the show. Mm-hmm. So the comics don't do Mad because it's funny, and the show is funny, and the comics are funny, and kids like humor, obviously, most people do, have done very well for us. Our numbers on Mad Magazine and the collections of Mad Magazine have skyrocketed. Not that they're gigantic numbers overall, but compared to what they were 2 years ago, they're five times bigger, six times bigger. So, and it's a continuous thing. This has been going on for over a year now that we've seen a steady increase in people, kids interested in Mad Magazine. They come into the store looking for something else, and when they see we have Mad or these Mad collections, they just go, oh my God, I love this. Oh, this is so much great. So that's really gotten a tremendous reaction from the kids to come in our store.
You know, one thing I'm interested in is that the Avengers movie came out, but Marvel has not created, at least not to my knowledge, a comic version of the movie. And oftentimes we've had Star Trek movies will have comic adaptations, but we haven't seen that as far as that. But, you know, as I think back, I don't think we've seen any of those Marvel movies converted into comics.
No, I mean, traditionally those adaptations don't do very well because it's just like the movie and there's not a lot of original material in them. And then they tend not to be good. They tend not to have 10 top-tier people on them. So both DC and Marvel have shied away from doing those too much because they just haven't had a strong sales history over time. And they've been putting their resources into putting out better quality stuff that is ancillary or similar or easy for new readers to come in. I mean, the big thing was back in 1999 when the first X-Men movie came out. People were like, oh, that's so great. And they went into comic stores and said, what do you got that's X-Men? And there was nothing to sell them that didn't take 30 years of explaining. Oh. You know, I was like, well, this is in the middle of a story and this isn't here. So that was something they addressed. They launched the Ultimate X-Men line and Ultimate Spider-Man. And now they're very good about doing miniseries and doing new story arcs that started at number one right around when a movie comes out. Like Captain America number one relaunched last year when the movie came out, so people could come into a store and read a Captain America comic book that starts with a number one, and it had a good writer and a good artist on it, and it was a good story. This year they did the Avengers Assemble comic, which isn't the best Avengers comic I've read, but it's decent, and it is something that kids can read, too. It's not designed for kids, but it's not something, you know, a 12- or 10-year-old can't read. There's nothing too extreme in it. So that's kind of their answer this year. They did Avengers Assemble, which has all those characters who are in the movie in an original story that's designed just to be out now in time with the movie. We've sold a few to kids and some people who don't know that much Avengers stuff. So.
Has Avengers vs. X-Men impacted the X-Men titles as much as the Avengers, or has it been more focused on the Avengers?
It's hard to say. They're both very popular titles, and I think the real impact has been people saw the movie and then heard about the Avengers vs. X-Men comic. That's what they've been trying, because they're familiar with the idea of both teams, and they're like, hey, that sounds kind of fun. And so that's definitely helped drive sales on that a little bit, I think, and interest in coming into comic stores. Again, the problem with the X-Men stuff is right now they're kind of in the middle of the story arc. A lot's been going on with them, and they're now dealing with all this Avengers vs. X-Men stuff, so it's hard for somebody to come in and just pick up an X-Men comic, just one comic. We try to sell collections, and like I said, the Avengers vs. X-Men is something that they can just pick up an issue number one on and try it out, so that's been good. And that's been driving sales on both the X-Books and the Avengers books, is the Avengers vs. X-Men, more than any of the movie tie-ins have, or people interested in the movie. But if people come in and say, hey, what do you have on Black Widow? What do you have about Hawkeye? Or what's a good Cap series I could read? And that certainly had an impact, but it hasn't been dramatic.
Now, how about the Ultimate Spider-Man? How's he doing these days?
Pretty well. Some of the heat's fallen off. People aren't as rabid for the current storyline with Miles Morales as they were a while ago, but still doing very well. I'll look back over 3 or 4 weeks and say, wow, we did sell a lot of those copies of the new issue, but it takes 3 or 4 weeks to really sell a good number of them. Still very popular, though.
Yeah. Now, how about Thief of Thieves, which is going to be turned into a TV show? Is that
well?
That
you know, that's not actually. It's been optioned for a TV show. Just because something has been optioned doesn't mean they're actually going to make a pilot, and it doesn't mean the pilot's going to get picked up. So, yeah, I had a bunch of, I guess, comic collectors or people, I don't know, come in a few weeks ago and buy up all my issues so they could turn around and sell them on eBay. Because, you know, they're selling for that number one, first printing of number one, selling for kind of a lot on eBay right now because everybody thinks it's the next Walking Dead, and the Walking Dead number one sells for like $1,000. They, oh, I can sell it for 30 or 40, and someday it'll be worth $1,000. So that kind of speculated craze is trying to drive the interest in it. It's an interesting series, and I think it could make a really good TV show, but, you know, we'll see. That's a long way off. But it definitely, once they announced that they had optioned it, AMC had optioned it for a TV show, yeah, sales shot up dramatically on it, and a lot of speculators and people came running into the stores to buy up the copies.
Interesting, because I'm always fascinated by that. I guess Mr. Kirkman's name is gold right now, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the most popular shows on television. He's making a ton of money for AMC and Image. And he's a good writer. He's been a good writer for 10 years. So I think he and his work on the TV show Walking Dead has proven that he's not just a good comic writer, he's a good writer. And people are interested in anything he has to say right now. Invincible, which is a superhero comic, is one of my favorite all-time superhero comics. I love getting people to read that because I think it's just phenomenally good. So, rightly so, is he a hot name right now, I feel.
Now, looking forward, the warmer months, do sales drop normally during the summer for you guys, or do they maintain their sales? How does that go?
Well, it's usually a little different for us. Most comic stores do better in the summertime. Maybe most stores do better in the summertime. People are out, a lot of kids, and people have summer jobs. They have some free time. They go on vacation. People like to read on vacation, so they want to buy comics. So generally, it's a very good time. Our store is a little different because we're right near a college campus, so during June and July, most of the college students are gone. So business, kind of, we get like the vacation crowd, and we get people coming in who haven't been in a while, so that picked up, but we also lose some of the students. So sales are down usually just slightly in the summer for us, but not, it's hard to say, because sometimes we're up a little, sometimes we're down a lot. Like last summer, last June was terrible for us. It was an absolute disaster. All the students left, and no one else came in to make up for their loss. This year, I have a feeling the summer will be pretty good for us, and I think some of our other stores that aren't near a college campus will have a really good summer. Our Bethesda store in particular, July tends to be their best month of the year every year. They do really well in June, July, and August.
Interesting. That's different. It's funny, based on where you are, I used to know a comic book store located next to a Navy base, and they used to sell all the time because they had disposable income. They were, you know, where they lived was
nothing
paid for.
To do.
Yeah, the food was paid for. Everything was paid for, and so they had all this money to spend. And so we used to do great business. But unfortunately, we don't have much of that around this area. So
yeah, it really depends. I was talking to a guy who used to work at a comic store near Fort Hood in Texas, and he said every Wednesday, people would be lined up 100 deep outside the store waiting for their turn to come in. Wow. It wasn't a huge store, but, I mean, they would line up for an hour waiting to come in and buy their comics every Wednesday. So for them, it was tremendous.
Bigger store, I guess they need.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, why don't you go ahead and give us the contact information and the information about the store's podcast.
Sure. I work at Big Planet Comics in College Park, Maryland. The phone number is 301-699-0498, and you can find us online at www.bigplanetcomics.com. And our podcast is Big Planet Comics, which you can find on the iTunes store and download from our website also. And it's always great to talk to you, Wayne.
Same here. I look forward to talking with you next month and see how May went.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see. I think it should be a really strong month for us.
So. Okay. Looking forward to that. Thanks as always, Pete.
Okay, thanks.
It's time for another news and previews, and with me as always is Ian Cullen. How are you, Ian?
I'm good. I'm now moved.
Great. And Gianluca, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm still in the same place.
Okay, that's Gianluca Glazer, of course. Ian, why don't you go ahead and give us the news that you have for this week?
I got two bits of news. We were talking off-air just now about Avengers, which is the best film ever. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. Even some of the talky bits, but it could have done with being about half hour shorter.
Okay.
Avengers has apparently powered Disney's stocks to an all-time high. Marvel's The Avengers has earned over $700 million worldwide. It was not only the number one movie in the United States for the weekend of May 4th, it is the number one opening movie in history. In addition to being a mega blockbuster, The Avengers displayed Hulk-like strength by helping Disney stocks hit an all-time earnings high. According to CNN Money, Disney shares passed the $45 mark on May 9th. As a matter of fact, Disney reported earnings for the first 3 months of the year that surged 18% versus 2011's earnings, but were able to be practically wiped out of the estimated $200 million lost by John Carter. That's a pretty impressive achievement there.
Well, it's up or down. They're either John Carter or the Avengers, so maybe they'll find a couple movies in the middle.
I think they've actually recouped a little bit on John Carter by pairing it with Avengers, haven't they? So.
Okay.
And I've got another news. It's a press release that was sent from Dynamite. The Masked Man rides again in the Lone Ranger, Snake of Orion, which is written by Chuck Dixon.
Mm.
I think he wrote Iron Man or something, Chuck Dixon.
Oh, Chuck Dixon's written a lot of people. I'm actually after him to talk on this podcast with me. He's written a lot of stuff. He's mostly known for his Batman stuff. He's written Batman and Nightwing and Robin, and he's doing a lot of things. He's actually writing G.I. Joe a lot these days. So he's always got something to do, and he's always got a good story to tell. He wrote Airboy, just came out recently, too, so he's always a busy writer.
Cool. Well, you know, that's another comic book from Lone Ranger. I've not read any of the Dynamite Lone Ranger books. To be honest, it's been going so long that I'm not sure where to start on them. So
they rebooted it recently, so it shouldn't be so bad. There should be like 5 or 6 books they're in, I think, by now.
Yeah, so I might buy a few of the trades. I'm pretty sure they've got trade paperbacks out there of it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
That's a new one that's due out, and it's going to be in stores everywhere from July.
Cool.
And it's called Lone Ranger and the Snake of Iron.
Is it a number one?
I think it's the number one of the new miniseries, yeah.
Okay, that's good. I think miniseries are actually better for some situations. I think this might be one of them. Okay, Gianluca, how about you?
All right, so most recent news. Avengers has done well for Marvel, but not everything is great over at Marvel. They let go of John Doakes, a longtime staff member there. He was a senior VP. Mm-hmm. In other news, Morrison Con, Grant Morrison's own convention that's going to be happening in Vegas. It's got some big-time people going to be there. You're going to have, besides Morrison, you're going to have Gerard Way, Jonathan Hickman, Frank Quitely, J.H. Williams III, I really love, Chris Burnham, and Jim Lee. For getting there is going to be very expensive. If you want a ticket to Morrison Con, it's $523.92.
Yikes.
That does not include a hotel cost. That's just for one person, one day. A hotel, it'll run you $767.
Wow.
So
they might be the only ones there.
They may be, except for the big spenders, people who learn how to sell a kidney. The reason they think it's worth that much is you're going to get a limited Morrison Con edition of the Grant Morrison and Derek Robertson book, Happy, a hardcover program guide and sketchbook, which you can get signed by all the guests that are going to be there. You're going to get to party with Grant Morrison, who's going to be a DJ, and then there's also breakfast with Chris Burnham, and you get a sketch of Batman on your napkin from him.
And that's worth $500, huh?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Some of that stuff you can maybe sell on eBay, so.
Probably plug 500 and sell it for 700 on eBay.
Yeah.
Let's hope. Okay.
Reported deaths, Maurice Sendak, quote-unquote from the Times, widely considered the most important children's book artist of the 20th century. He died of complications from a stroke at the age of 83. He is most famous for Where the Wild Things Are. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sad news there. Mm-hmm. In other sad news, Vertigo announced, or at least Jeff Lemire announced, that Sweet Tooth from Vertigo is going to end at issue number 40.
Oh, nuts. I'm enjoying that book.
Yeah, but Jeff is working on other big things right now, like Animal Man. And Vertigo is also has some of the old guard ending as well, too. You have Scalped ending, Northlanders, which has run for a few years, as well as iZombie.
Right, Chris Robertson, that's the whole
thing. Yeah, he's on the way out from DC.
Yeah.
Comixology announced that they will be the exclusive distributor for Marvel's monthly periodical comics, digitally, that is. In addition, Marvel Comics will now be available through Comixology's digital storefront. So. And we have April sales.
Right.
Interesting stuff there. Mm-hmm. They're up from March, and they're up from last year as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
In comparison, the top 300 comic book units were up 14% versus last year's. Mm-hmm. In terms of dollars, the comic books, the periodicals, were up 12% versus last year, so some big numbers there. Trades were up as well. In terms of units, up 27% versus last year for the top 300, and up, in terms of dollars, 16% versus last year.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel was in the lead with 39.07% in units versus DC's 34.06%. Mm-hmm. So there's like a 5% difference there.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of dollars, Marvel was up 34.64% to DC's 30.12%. So mm-hmm. a little over 4% in terms of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Image is number 3 in both dollars and units. Dark Horse and Dynamite kind of alternate in the 4th and 5th place. And then Boom is 6th place, both in dollars and units.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we leave the top 10,
sure.
Avengers vs. X-Men number 2 was in first place.
Yeah.
The thing I haven't been able to find is the monthly numbers. I don't know how many units Avengers vs. X-Men number 2 sold.
It was 158,650, according to the Comic Chronicles by J.J. Miller.
Okay, how does that compare to number 1? Do they compare that?
You can find all that kind of information on comiccron.com.
Okay, I'll take a look, because that interests me. I want to know how the events do from month to month. This is like a 12-month deal, so this is going to be interesting to see how consistent.
I believe it's 200,000, the first book.
Yeah, the first one, that's right. Yeah. That's right. So it's down over 50,000. But that's not unusual for a number two, though.
Yeah.
It dropped quite significantly. Interestingly enough, Batman number 8 was the second one.
Yeah.
The reason for that was because Justice League had a guest artist instead of Jim Lee drawing it, and so it dropped down some. Then we get to AVX number 1,
yeah.
4th, and Green Lantern, Action, Detective, Batman the Dark Knight, which Greg Herwood still hasn't started writing yet. Then the last two are Marvel's Uncanny X-Men and Avengers. So pretty interesting stuff. It's going to be curious to see as we go forward how this works.
Yeah. I took a look at some of the other numbers beyond the top 10, and I just wanted to note some of the other guys besides Marvel and DC that show up on the charts. At number 31, you have the Shadow number 1 from Dynamite.
Ooh, that's good.
It did 45,548. Image shows up for the first time at number 47 with The Walking Dead number 96. And then they take number 48 right after that with Saga number 2. That's Brian K. Vaughan's book. Number 74 is the first appearance of Dark Horse with Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 9. Freefall number 8. Boom Studios shows up at number 80 with Fanboy vs. Zombies. That was Sam Humphrey's book, and that was a dollar book, and it sold 25,935, which is a really good number for like an indie, and it's also a non-licensed title, too.
Right.
Other interesting stuff, Star Wars Boba Fett is Dead. It was number 82 with 25,344. Fatale number 4 was number 90, 22,804. America's Got Powers, that's an Image book, was 97, with 19,439. And then IDW's first appearance is at 102, with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 9, which did under 20,000.
That's interesting. We'll see how this goes moving forward.
Yeah. So, I wanted to mention, in terms of graphic novels, trades, pretty much The Walking Dead kind of dominated. I mean,
as always.
I mean, but especially this particular month, the top 20 is just basically almost entirely Walking Dead, you have the top three spots being Walking Dead Volumes 1, 2, and 3, respectively. Number 4 is actually like a DC book called Flex Mentallo, Man of Muscle Mystery. Chew is number 5. Chew Volume 5 is number 5.
Mm-hmm.
You have Cinderella Fables Are Forever from DC was number 6. Then you have Walking Dead for number 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. You have The Walking Dead, War of the Trades. Batman Incorporated Deluxe Hardcover, Grant Morrison's book, was number 13. Then you have 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 are Walking Dead. Number 19 was Daredevil Season 1, Premium Hardcover Edition from Marvel. Then number 20, you have Walking Dead Volume 13.
Wow. So Robert Kirkman really doesn't have to write anything else the rest of his life, doesn't he?
Seems like it. Yeah. That's just direct markets. We're not talking about like your Barnes & Noble's booksellers around
right.
the country. Amazon.
Wow. Man. Okay, Ian, why don't we go ahead and talk about the previews. What books are you looking forward to this week?
Well, as ever, these are not necessarily ones I'm looking forward to or getting, but the ones that I'm pretty sure other people will be getting, because there's nothing really due out this week that I get. But Source Country Issue 3 is coming out this week. That's a new Paul Cornell series that DC have been running. It's through the flying saucers and government agencies and stuff like that, so I should imagine it's got a bit of that old style, sort of like 1960s type of vibe to it, from what I've been reading. And then there's a very, very big trade paperback coming out this week through Image Comics. It's called Eerie Archives, and it's in hardcover, and it's $50. Just shy of $50. So that's actually coming through Dark Horse Comics. And Conan the Barbarian Issue 4 is out this week through Dark Horse. Then through IDW, you've got the very, very popular 30 Days of Night, 10 Bloody Years Treasury Edition, and that's just shy of $10. You got the complete Chester Goode's Dick Tracy hardcover. That's volume 13. That's just shy of $40. And you have a Lock and Key issue 6 of 6, which is out this week.
Yeah. That's Clockworks. That's the next to the last miniseries. So that's a big one.
And, well, obviously with Marvel, I've not been able to get oldest, but it's God knows how many Avengers titles. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Avengers titles out this next week. One called Avengers Contest, which is trade paperback. Yeah.
So, let me interject one real quick thing. You reminded me of something. There's a story circulating, and we don't know how accurate it is, that as Scarlet Witch reduced the mutant population, she's apparently going to try to do the same thing to the number of Avengers that exists. Because, you know, there was a House of M, and now they're talking about something like a House of A, where she's actually going to try to cut back on the number of Avengers. But I don't think Marvel will like that if she tries to do that. But I don't think that'll happen, but I just find that kind of intriguing.
There's two new Avengers titles out as well next week. So, well, I was going to say that any casual people that are catching this now and have just seen the Avengers movie and never read an Avengers book in their lives, well, you know, I'd actually be inclined to go for the trade paperback Avengers Contest if I was actually coming in new to it and wanted to get a feel for the comics. Don't know about you, Wayne.
Well, there's a hardcover that it's like recaps the first story and several ones, and if you read the very first of the Avengers stories, the villain is, just like the movie, Loki. So there's similarities between that original story and the movie. Not a lot of them, but some. So if anybody wants to go and read that and see how much of that was in there, it also sets up a lot of things. There are two people that are in there that are not in the movies, and that's the Ant-Man and the Wasp. Hawkeye and the Black Widow, who show up much later in the game, are actually in the movie. But it's just an interesting thing. I would say, yeah, go back and get some of the trades. There's some hardcovers around. It really depends on which era of the Avengers you're going to want to get into. The current one, there's Secret Avengers and other Avengers and all kinds of different. I think the Avengers Academy happens to be the one that I like the most, so I would go with that. But yeah, there's one called Avengers Black Widow Strikes. Now, she's always had her own miniseries without Avengers before, so now I guess they've decided, since she's very likely to get her own little movie coming up, that they're going to do that. So, but anyway, that's all I have to say on that.
And of course, my last one for this week, and this is one I am looking forward to, Planet of the Apes issue 14 comes out this week.
Number 14.
And I thought I'd get that in because I'm pretty sure John Luca would have got to me if I hadn't.
Right.
Okay, John Luca, how about you?
For May 16th, some interesting titles. That Woman number 9 goes on sale. Shadow number 2 from Dynamite. Garth Ennis is writing that. If you have $50 to just blow, IDW has the deluxe edition hardcover of The Last Unicorn. I like the cartoon by Rankin and Bass back in the 80s, but maybe it was older than that. But anyway, if you're into that. Boom Studios has Adventure Time number 4. That's a big seller for them. And Valen the Outcast from Boom Studios, issue number 6 goes on sale. The series is ending with issue number 8, incidentally.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I just saw on the latest issue of May previews, it mentions that issue 8 is the last issue. So.
Oh, that's too bad. I've been enjoying that book.
It is a shame. I believe it was supposed to be an ongoing series, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
Nuts.
And Red 5 has Atomic Robo Real Science Adventures number 2. Just wanted to mention Free Comic Book Day. I picked up their Free Comic Book Day book. That was very entertaining, the Atomic Robo.
That was fun. It's a great book. You didn't happen to get the Mouse Guard one, did you?
I did. I went to a few places so that I would have multiple copies of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was well worth waiting in line for an hour for.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Oh, that's wonderful stuff. Okay, let me run down a couple of things. We're talking about expensive stuff. The most expensive thing that I can see for this week is, I'm not going to be buying it, but it's called Artifacts Foil Variant by Silvestri, signed complete set for a measly $500. And you better really like that stuff in order to get it. Now, I am getting one of the more expensive things. Green Lantern animated series, The Hal Jordan Maquette, is finally coming out. It's $125. But I'm such a fan of the animated series and of the guy who's doing the voice of Hal Jordan on there that I'm getting that. So that one will be good. Other things that are out, Birds of Prey, which is part of the Night of the Owls. Interesting, Batwoman's not, but Birds of Prey is part of the Night of the Owls, which is going great guns. And Catwoman, which is also part of Night of the Owls. Green Lantern Corps is coming out. Justice League number 9. Justice League number 4 has a third printing is coming out. You know, you talked about Fatale. There's a, I think, let me see, there's a fifth printing of number 1 is coming out this week. So that'll be something interesting to get. Supergirl, Wonder Woman, which is doing very well. Then I get down to Saga number 3 and Thief of Thieves by the aforementioned Mr. Kirkman and Thunderbolts, which I'm enjoying, 174. Venom, which I really like, number 18 is coming out. Daredevil by Mark Wade. Shadow number 2. Which you'd be doing well. From Oni Press, Sixth Gun, number 22, which is always a good book. And I think that's all that I have for this week. Okay, and on that note, we'll come to a close for this week's news and previews. Talk to you guys again next week.
Ew. Cool. See you. See you, Wayne.
And that's a wrap for the 54th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be back next week when I'll have lots more good content for you to listen to. But until then, keep reading your comics.